guys, David Brooke here. This is the AIPT Comics podcast, and we're on episode 12. Last week, we had an hour-long interview with Scott Snyder. I recommend you go back and listen to that. But before you do, listen to this show, because we have so much news to talk about. Me and my fellow guest co-host, Chris Hassan.
Hi, everybody.
Chris is here filling in for Forrest, and I hope Forrest is back next week. I think he will be. So to start our show, we always talk about the biggest comic book news that's hitting the web and getting people talking. And the first bit of news I want to talk about this week is Second Coming, which was a DC Vertigo book. And I say was because they actually canceled the book. Unfortunately, the book would have probably done really well with DC Vertigo because it's very indie. It's very cutting edge. It's going to upset people because it's about Jesus sort of banding together with the world's Superman and trying to learn something from him because the world loves Superman.
That
but
sounds
doesn't
like a great
Jesus.
Story. What, why would that upset people?
Yeah, churches were already coming out against it. So I think they've had, DC Vertigo's had enough controversy in the last couple months, which we've talked about on this show, and they probably just wanted to get away from that. And we just learned this week, though, that Ahoy Comics, one of the newest publishers hitting the scene, which came out around, they actually started in September, is taking it up, which makes a lot of sense because Mark Russell, who's writing Second Coming, he actually writes a lot of short stories for Ahoy Comics, which is a comic magazine, which has one main story and then a bunch of short stories and some other things. Grant Morrison's actually written a few short stories for Ahoy Comics. Anyway, I think this is great news. I actually spoke to Mark Russell at San Diego Comic-Con last year about Second Coming, and it's going to be definitely pushing the buttons of certain folks, but also shining a light on religion and that whole scene. I don't know. Are you a religious man, Chris?
Wow. Starting with a loaded question. I am not a religious man, but I am spiritual about my love of comics. Is that a good answer?
Oh, I like it. I like it. That is good.
No, I think this is great news. I think, dare I say, are we turning a corner in society where we're not giving in to so much online hysteria? If Ahoy Comics embrace this despite the controversy, and then we've got James Gunn coming back for Guardians 3, I feel like the clouds are beginning to part.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But probably not, but I hope so.
I mean, I guess we're lucky that there are newer, smaller publishers like Ahoy that will take up the reins. And I mean, I bet DC Vertigo could have squashed the book entirely if they wanted to. But by letting another publisher publish it, I mean, that's some good faith right there.
Yeah, it's awesome to see them willing to take on the challenge.
Now, James Gunn getting the job of Guardians of the Galaxy 3 back, that's not comic news, but sort of, because it's in the comic realm. I think everyone seems excited about this.
I'm excited, yeah.
I wonder is Fox News excited?
Let's wait and see.
Yeah, because he was, one of the reasons why he was taken off was because a lot of these alt-right and sort of conservative sites and news programs were against him. For tweets he wrote 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We will see. Lesson to all of us, watch out what you're tweeting because you could be in big trouble 10 years from now.
But definitely check out the tweet for this episode.
And also check out Jonathan Hickman's tweets, which is our next bit of news. He tweeted out a GIF from 2001 A Space Odyssey of the monkeys using rocks and bones, I think, in front of the monolith. And it coincided, more or less, with a ad that was running in all the Marvel comics this week. And I say ad because it took up a full page, but had no branding on it. It just had the words, "When two aggressive species share the same environment, evolution demands adaptation or dominance." So this is clearly something Marvel is pushing to get people excited. But personally, I'm not. I don't know what this means. I don't know what it's trying to do.
I think it's a teaser for the 2020 election.
Is Jonathan Hickman running for president?
He's announcing in every Marvel comic.
Wow.
I mean, obviously the online rumor is it's either the X-Men or the Eternals. I don't know where this rumor started, but in the X-Men world, they've been saying for a very long time that Hickman was going to take over the X-Books. I hope he doesn't. I'm not the biggest Hickman fan, and I really like the direction the X-Books are going in right now, especially with Matthew Rosenberg finally getting a chance to tell his story alone in Uncanny X-Men. So we will probably find out at C2E2 this weekend. But yeah, I it could be Eternals. What would the Eternals movie coming from Marvel Studios? But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I would lean towards Eternals. I would think they would if you're Jonathan Hickman and you haven't written for Marvel in ages, and I would want them to give me a corner of the universe to just explore on my own, right?
Right.
And the Eternals is very much not being written about in the main comics. The Eternals, are they connected to the Celestials? I forget.
I believe so, yeah. And the Inhumans, it's all kind of, everything kind of came from the Celestials. And I know that Neil Gaiman kind of redid the Eternals a couple, was it probably 10 years ago now. But yeah. And then they had a series after that, but I think they kind of faded away after that.
Yeah, and Jason Aaron in the current Avengers series has brought in the Celestials a little bit. And the Avengers actually live inside, or their headquarters are inside a dead Celestial, right, which is kind of badass. So they've definitely dabbled a little bit recently. So I could see maybe it being resurgence, especially because there's going to be a show or a movie mm-hmm. based on them.
We will see.
I don't know. I've liked Hickman's work in the past. I know some people are very sour on some of the stuff he's done, but I don't know. He's pushed the needle in certain ways and surprised people. So I could see him, you know, flourishing, especially since he's only been doing indie stuff and not these big two stories.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of other TV movie properties coming down the pike, Marvel Studios is producing a What If TV series for the new Disney Plus streaming service, which hasn't even started yet. I am so pumped for this. I love What If comics, and I think this is going to be insane. It's going to be like Black Mirror, but with superheroes, I would imagine. I don't know how big the budget is, though. It really worries me because some of these What If stories are huge stories. Like, they require crazy special effects and obviously actors that might be playing the characters. Like, you'd want to have Chris Evans playing Captain America if it's a Captain
which
America
won't happen.
No, probably not.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not excited in one sense because I don't want to pay for Disney Plus. So I don't know how or when I'll see these shows, but I'm excited about a What If concept for a TV show. I think that's cool. And I've always loved the What If comics. I wish they would just bring them out on a more consistent basis instead of every couple of years, like, seem to do an event around them.
You know, what's funny is it actually coincides. Marvel's in the process of reprinting all the What If books in these complete editions. So it's interesting. At AAPTcomics.com, we actually get trade paperbacks to review all the time. And a lot of the time, you get these books that are like, why are they putting out this? And then, like, within a month or two, there's some news about the Eternals coming back or whatever. It's clear that they're trying to put stuff into print that will eventually be bought down the line. Speaking of new comics being put out, in our last bit of news, a ton of comics from a variety of publishers have been announced. One of which includes the Bloodshot, a new Bloodshot ongoing from Valiant Entertainment, which is going to be written by Tim Seeley and art by Brett Booth, which is a little surprising. Brett Booth's been DC exclusive for a while.
Big name in the 90s. I remember reading a lot of his comics back in the day.
He drew Flash for the last couple of years, and I thought it's been excellent. Although, you know, I've seen some people online being like, I don't like it, but I don't know. There's always someone who doesn't like something on the internet, right?
Really? I had no idea.
Well, that series is coming out in September, and it's actually being rebooted or at least restarted because the Bloodshot movie is coming out February 21st, 2020. So they're trying to coincide with that with the trade paperback, as always. It's funny, all these publishers keep putting out comics to coincide with movies, but all the statistics show it doesn't matter. Like, people are going to go see Captain Marvel, but they're not going to buy the Captain Marvel comics necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, they might buy Bloodshot. I saw Bob Layton talking about the Bloodshot movie, I want to say last year at Comic-Con. That's Con with two N's. It's in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. But he's very excited, and he's been posting a lot about it online. It's got Vin Diesel in it. So I'm curious to see.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, curious to see what... I mean, I'm not a big Bloodshot guy. I don't know a lot about him, but I know what he looks like. So it'll be interesting to see if they translate that to the big screen.
He basically has an insane healing factor.
Oh.
And he's a mercenary of some sort.
Okay, so he sounds a lot like Deadpool.
He has like nano robots in him that like rebuilds him. I don't know. There's been some good runs from Valiant as of late.
Yeah, I know they had a real resurgence. So it's just so many comics, not enough time.
As the X-Men Monday editor,
mm-hmm.
are you excited for Wolverine Exit Wounds number one, which was just announced? It's going to be written by Chris Claremont, Larry Hama, and Sam Keith?
No. I know I saw CB talking about how this is part of their 80 years of Marvel celebration. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing more of this, bringing back old creators. So obviously, you know, Claremont launched Wolverine solo series and Larry Hama took it over. Sam Keith did a lot of those Marvel Comics Presents Wolverine stories. And then LaRocca worked with Claremont Extreme X-Men. So this is very much a celebration of Wolverine's legacy here. I don't know much about the story. I assume it's calling it Exit Wounds. I'm assuming this is one more Return of Wolverine comic we're gonna pump out for some money. And it's got Kitty Pryde in it too. So Claremont loves his Kitty. So yeah, I'm sure it'll be more of the same Claremont, modern Claremont writing. I read the Larry Hama Wolverine comics when I first started getting into X-Men, but I can't say I remember anything about them. But sure, I'm excited that someone will enjoy this.
I mean, I'm a big Sam Keith fan myself, so okay. I could see that being cool, but you're right. It's like a throwback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like they've been doing a lot of these and they're going to keep doing them. And I'm more interested to see who else they're going to bring back. Because I know obviously John Byrne was talked about for a while, but he's been hit with a lot of online controversy and a lot of people tweeting at CB not to bring back Byrne. So it'll be interesting if they bring him back. But beyond that, are there any creators you'd like to see come back? Do one more story?
Oh, man. Alan Davis, I suppose.
Okay. He's still kicking around. I feel like he does the occasional thing.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know. I'm one of those people that kind of liked Excalibur, but I understand why it's hard to get into.
Yeah.
It's a dense read.
Yeah, definitely.
Wolverine X Wounds comes out in June, so perfect. It's a summer release.
A summer book.
Woohoo! When we're all off from school.
We're reading on the beach. A dense, dense Claremont read for the beach.
Another book that was announced is Donny Cates and Trad Moore's Silver Surfer, which is kind of cool. It makes sense, I suppose, since Donny Cates has taken over Guardians. And he's getting into this whole space realm, cosmic realm of Marvel Comics. I'm a big fan of Trad Moore. I've seen most of his work is from Image Comics that I've read, but he has a very fluid, unique style that would suit a cosmic story featuring someone like Silver Surfer.
Is this going to be an ongoing or a miniseries?
It's a limited series.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And this one starts in June as well.
You know, it's tough. Silver Surfer is a tough character now because after that Dan Slott, Mike Allred run, that kind of redefined the character. It's kind of like, where do you go with him? And I know there was like a one-shot a while back, but he's kind of been off the board on that scale. So it'll be interesting to see what Cates does. But I feel like Silver Surfer has kind of become one of those Daredevil-like characters where that run was so significant, like Bendis' run with Daredevil, that like someone, whoever comes along next, needs to kind of reinvent the wheel like Mark Waid did. With right. Chris Samney and everybody. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the Surfer.
Oh, by the way, it's called Silver Surfer Black.
Oh.
It's the Black album.
Yeah, Weezer. Whenever I'm on, I try to mention Weezer at least once.
It seems like every host on this show has to bring something back. Another series that's been announced is Matt Wagner's Grendel Prime. Grendel is classic comic character. This one's from Dark Horse Comics. I'm kind of excited. I've read a lot of Grendel comics in my day, and they're all kind of disconnected in a sense. It's not like he's a Batman character that's had this long historic run. It's sort of like Wagner and other creators have dabbled with the character and explored it in different realms, like in a noir style 50s. And this looks like he's going to space, which is pretty cool, I suppose. And it comes out October 2nd. Have you read any Grendel?
When I was younger, I read the Batman Grendel crossover books.
Oh yeah,
but I can't tell you remember anything aside from the fact that he wears an all black suit and has like a stick or a staff or something.
I remember drawing his mask when I was younger. I thought the eyes were cool. It's almost like a Spider-Man eyes, but then it has this slash through it. Yeah, it's one of those characters that looks really cool, and it's always had, or pretty much has always had, really good artists on it. So one of the more visual comics characters that, like Spawn, I'd say.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, guys, we're getting through this. We're getting through this.
So much news.
DC Zoom and DC Inc. have released some, they've announced some books that are coming out this fall. DC Zoom and DC Inc. are the middle grade and younger reader book lines that they announced last summer at San Diego Comic-Con. One involves Swamp Man-like character called Swamp Kid, and the other is Superhero Girls. I've actually had the chance to read and review the Super Sons book that comes out April 2nd, and that was actually written by a novelist, a young adult novelist, and it's actually quite good. It's really paced well, and it's fun to read, you know, 200-300 pages straight out. And it's interesting also to get that good pacing through that much story.
What did you said Swamp Kid?
Yeah, it's called Swamp Kid.
Is it it's like Swamp Thing's son or sidekick? Like what is it related to Swamp Thing?
It's a lighthearted coming-of-age tale about a half-human, half-plant boy named Russell Wainwright. The book is completely written and drawn in first-person journal entries and features a fun, innovative, lined notebook-style format.
Hmm.
Ah, so kids who like doodle all day in school and hate school will connect to the character.
Okay, that's Swamp Kid, everybody. Coming soon.
I mean, obviously, probably a lot of our listeners aren't children, but if you do have children, I would recommend checking these out. They haven't really kicked off yet, to be honest. Zoom and Ink haven't really started. They're going to start in April, though. And I think it's cool that DC's sort of giving a whole new line where parents could, you know, go to that line and know there isn't going to be inappropriate stuff and just pull from that line, you know?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think, I mean, anytime these publishers put out all ages lines or some kind of new imprint, I wish it would stick around. It seems like they go away within 6 months. I remember Marvel Tsunami. That was a thing they did for a while.
Oh, what's that?
I think that's where we got Runaways from.
Oh.
It was kind of like trying to be more like manga, I think, but they... the art wasn't very manga-y, but they had Runaways. They had like a young Namor comic.
And it was like in a digest format, right?
They put them out in collections and digest. But yeah, they did. I think was it Mary Jane was part of that line.
Didn't Kirkman do an Ant-Man one?
Yeah, that he was in there. Because I know I have the digest of Kirkman's Ant-Man, who's now Black Ant in Spider-Man and all those Spencer books. But yeah, they had a bunch of that Human Torch book. There's a Venom book. It was kind of all over the place, but it was like the Tsunami line and none of that stuff stuck around except for Runaways. But yeah, I enjoy when the companies try to get new readers and they just got to stick with it for a little longer than a year, you know?
Thankfully, it looks like DC's sticking with DC Black Label for a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
We have Damned that's still coming out. It's been delayed, but then we also have, you know, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's final Batman story.
Oh, where can people hear about that?
Oh, last week's podcast, actually, where Scott Snyder talks a little bit about it.
So get your time machine, everybody.
Okay, the last release. I swear to God, this is it.
Okay.
It's a big one. It's a big one. Frank Miller and John Romita Jr.'s Superman Year One, which starts in, guess the month. Guess the month it comes out.
June.
That's right.
Yay.
Get your wallets ready, folks, because you're going to have to buy this, too.
You've got several months to raise $4 to buy this book.
It's part of the DC Black Label, so it's probably oversized, mm-hmm. Which is cool, but it will also increase the price, I'm sure. And I guess in November, it'll all be collected. So if you want to wait it out and get the collected edition, that's November 12th, it's coming out.
That sounds like a Christmas.
Actually, when we were at Fan Expo 2018, John Romita Jr. talked a little bit about the work he was doing with Frank Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he was a Marvel guy for decades, and he's getting to do some of the most exciting work you can do at this stage in his career, where he's clearly like defined himself and people are big fans, and now he gets to work with Frank Miller on an origin story of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I'm a little hesitant, though. I mean, Frank Miller, you know, I don't know. I think we've reached his best years,
yep.
And some of the work he's been putting out lately is decent, but not great. And, you know, obviously he put out that terrorist book a couple years ago that was but it was kind of racist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get excited about this book at all. I think the constant stream of Dark Knight Returns stuff he's been putting out kind of took the specialness away from Frank Miller DC characters. And it's very clear, you know, he's like Claremont in the regard that, like, he has a very clear vision of who these people are, and he will use that vision. You know, he's not really thinking about what you want to see in a Batman book or Superman book. It's like, this is Frank Miller Superman, and he's going to end up like Superman in his Dark Knight books, you know? So, I mean, he might prove me wrong, but I feel like when these things get announced, a lot of the excitement comes from the old school comic fans that loved him growing up, and the people within the comic industry who still hold these people in high regard. But I think new readers probably won't enjoy this that much.
What's interesting, too, is, I mean, because it's DC Black Label, Miller and Romita Jr. can basically do whatever they want and change Superman's origin. So that's kind of neat if you like Elseworlds stories.
Yeah.
But it's not part of canon. So how much does it really matter?
We shall see.
We all know one thing. Chris is definitely not buying that
one. I'm sure I'll read it somehow. Just like I'll read Doomsday Clock someday, and I'll read this Jesus book, everything.
The Jesus, yeah, I'm sure the Jesus book is on the top of your list.
It's a long, it's a long life. I'll get to it, everybody.
All right, guys, in our next segment in the show, which we talk about last week's comics, are the books that we liked the most and we highly recommend. We always start this segment by talking about the number one rated comic of the week from comicbookroundup.com, which is like the Rotten Tomatoes of comic book reviews. And last week, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 42 got a 10 out of 10 based on three writers, one of which was one of our reviewers at AIPTComics.com, Brian Clements, who gave it a 10. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. And this is actually the 50th issue, if you count all the one-shots. So it was a bit of like an anniversary style issue.
But it says 42.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling.
Okay.
Actually, in the solicit, it says, that's right, this issue, number 42, is our 50th. It says 42 on the cover, but that's only because we had 8 issues and then a second number one in our first year. Although this one goes on and on and on.
All right. I've never read Squirrel Girl.
But remember that woman that might have been playing her in a movie?
Like? Anna Kendrick?
That's right.
That woman I like. You shouldn't say that on the air, because now Anna Kendrick is going to get nervous.
Yeah, there's more pressure now.
More pressure next time I see her, and more pressure for her to be in that movie. I've never read an issue of Squirrel Girl. I know Brian is a big fan of it, and I know it's very popular. Again, it's one more for the list of comics I need to read. I have seen Erica Henderson. She's the former artist, right?
Yep. Oh, she was part of this one, too.
Yeah, I saw her at a Ladies Con, which is a local con in Somerville, Massachusetts. And I've interviewed her before. But it's something I'll get to. I'm never really in the mood for funny comics, ironically. But yeah, I'll...
Morose dude.
I'm a morose dude, yeah, because, you know, pining after Anna. But yeah, what are your thoughts? Is this a good book? Should I check it out?
Well, Ryan North's ability to put he puts these footnotes in on every page, or not every page, but most pages in his Squirrel Girl comics. They are a hilarious way to sort of break the fourth wall, reflect on what you just read on that page. And he's been doing it for years. And I just love that he does that. He did it in Adventure Time when he was doing those Adventure Time comics. It's great. Yeah, I think it's light and fun. And most of these books you can just jump right into and enjoy because they're so silly. There's not a lot of weight and backstory you need to really enjoy the humor.
Yeah, I think that's what attracts me about comics I read, is that weight and that history and the high stakes. Every month I need it. So
so that's the number one reason why you don't want to read them. Yeah, Squirrel Girl.
I need stakes.
Speaking of stakes, I believe your number one pick for last week had a lot of stakes.
It was a meaty choice, some would say.
Uh-huh.
This makes no sense now because it's Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man number 17. By Nick Spencer and Humberto Ramos. Yeah, I'm not a big Kraven fan, but I, of all the comics I read last week, this was the one I enjoyed the most. I really enjoyed Spencer's Spider-Man run so far. And one of the things, it kind of, yeah, dovetails with what I just said, but every issue, it seems like there's so much going on in the comic, and it's really building on that history. And so, you know, you sit down, it's a meaty read, there's a lot going on, and... high stakes. You know, Spider-Man's really sick, and now he's battling all of his animal rogues gallery, animal themed, and Kraven's got some interesting motives here. So I really enjoyed it.
I actually reviewed this book for AIPTComics.com. I wasn't a huge fan, in part because 3 or so pages is devoted to Black Cat, which was already sort of shown to us in Amazing Spider-Man number 16.hu.
Dot who?
And it made me wonder, like, why did they even put out HU? Because they kind of recap what's going on with her.
I think they put that out because money.
Oh, that's right.
They like money.
I always forget about how there's money involved in all this. No, I'm actually really excited for Hunted for one of the reasons you just said. Also, I mean, Scott Snyder was reminding me last week on the podcast how important, you know, Kraven's last hunt was. And I feel like Nick Spencer is sort of exploring the space of that whole realm. I mean, at the end of this issue, spoilers, at the end of issue number 17, Spider-Man wakes up in his black costume. I mean, how exciting is that?
Yeah, I actually viewed it as kind of Spencer kind of retconning that. Because, yeah, Kraven's like, I feel like Spencer's been doing this a lot with his run. His whole run is kind of like putting things back in place that were important to Spider-Man lore. And I think Kraven's Last Hunt is held in such high regard by creators and fans. And then they brought Kraven back a couple years ago with that that storyline. I think, was it Joe Kelly wrote it, I want to say? Mm. Where he had his whole family. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was resurrected. And I think this is kind of like, you know, obviously Kraven, spoilers if you haven't read it, but he kind of has a death wish. He doesn't want to be alive again. So it's kind of bringing back the importance of Kraven's Last Hunt, which I'm all for. I think there are certain sacred cows within comics that, like, people of a certain generation want to keep sacred. I think obviously Gwen Stacy being dead is one of them. I think Grant Morrison kind of had that with Jean Grey, that he thinks Jean Grey should never have come back from the dead. And he tried to reverse that, and obviously that didn't work. But it's interesting to see when creators come back and kind of try to set things right.
That's true. Yeah. My biggest problem with the issue was it's like Hunger Games. I mean, we haven't had confirmation on that yet, but maybe I'm wrong. But
I can confirm that Katniss will be in the next issue.
A lot of bow and arrows. Okay, guys, my number one pick for last week was Avengers No Road Home number 5, which is the weekly series written by Al Ewing, Jim Zub, and Mark Waid. And this issue was drawn by Sean Isaacs.
Wait a minute. I interviewed him for Cyclops Week.
Which one?
Sean Isaacs.
Wow. I mean, his art in this issue is phenomenal.
He loves him some Cyclops, so check that out. Check that out, fans.
You should. Yeah, he's a big Cyclops fan. This issue, I don't want to spoil it. Overall, the series is kind of moving slowly because it is weekly. They can get away with having very little happening, but focus on the characters, which it's done an admirable job of. This issue at the end, though, introduces a very big character that has just come back to Marvel Comics. I'm going to say no more, but it's kind of mind-boggling. We're seeing this character interact with Scarlet Witch.
Galactus. It's Galactus. He's big.
I meant literally big. Yes. I actually gave it the highest score of the of all the 5 reviews that were up on comicbookroundup.com. So I guess I was right. This is the best book of the week. There's a lot
You're
of action.
Humble. You're very humble.
There's a lot of action in this series. It involves a new villain named Nyx, who is the daughter of Zeus.
Okay.
She and her kids basically killed all the Greek gods, and Hercules is not happy about that for obvious reasons.
I thought Wonder Woman was the daughter of Zeus.
Oh, well, you know, they also have Zeus in their universe as well. Who was writing that, by the way? Was it
Wonder Woman? Brian Azzarello?
It was Brian Azzarello, right?
Yeah, that was a good run.
Cliff Chiang, right? Which was drawing it?
Yeah, really good stuff. So that's the throwback pick of the week, people. Wonder Woman, new 52 run.
Anyway, I highly recommend this issue in particular. I think anyone could pick it up and just enjoy it because there's lots of action. Heroes make hard choices and, you know, resolve the issues, but also jump into another problem. I think this is a 12-issue series, which is, again, weekly. And Al Ewing, Jim Zub, Mark Waid, they're some of the best comic writers at Marvel and in general. And I think they've been a stand-up job capturing the characters, especially Immortal Hulk, who is creepy as hell. And it's an interesting new take on the character, I think.
Yeah, I would, before I read this, I'd have to read all the former Avengers stories, starting with what was the big event they had that was weekly?
No Surrender.
No Surrender. And then came No Road Home is this one. That was the last. What was the last one before this?
I thought it was No Surrender. Wasn't it?
I don't know.
That was about a year ago now.
Okay. Oh, wait. There was a Quicksilver story, I think. It was like Quicksilver, No Surrender or something after that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But yeah, there's been a lot of little series spinning out of that Wade Zub Ewing event. So I'd have to do a lot of catch up. But
yeah, you might want to, because the last one introduced a new character named Voyager, who plays a big part in this issue.
Yeah. So more for my list.
You know, you have so much homework before you get back on the show.
I need to just go live in an island and read comics the rest of my life.
It will take your whole life to I think.
What's next, Dave?
Well, that was the top books of last week's segment. Now we're moving on to a rotating segment called Trash It or Treasure It.
Ooh.
Last time we did this segment, I had to treasure Thanos. And this is a segment where I randomly pick a character, and then I flip a coin, and you have to either defend it or diss the character for 2 minutes or less. So make an argument 2 minutes or less. I mean, it can literally be 2 words or less if you really are really good at it.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of words, so.
So this week, I'm going to randomly generate a Marvel character for Chris.
Here we go.
And then I'm going to flip this coin here.
Like Two-Face.
Just like Two-Face. You know, actually, I bought one of those realistic Two-Face coins for $20.
That seems like a good use of your money.
Well, here's the best part. I don't even know where the hell it is.
You probably spent it.
That was from Sideshow Collectibles.
You spent it on comics.
It was a nice coin, but guess what? There was a strange, note, like a text burned into it that said, this is not real currency. Mm. And it ruined the coin. I messaged them like, what the hell? The pictures you showed didn't show this. And they were like, in America, if you make a toy coin of any sort, no matter how non-realistic it looks, they have to print on it legally that it's not real.
Yeah, so that you don't... there are a lot of toy rules in America. It looks like Megatron, the Transformer, they can't sell the gun in America. If they do, it has to come with the orange plug on the end.
Right. It's so silly. The coin thing doesn't... I don't get it. If you went to a bank and went, please give me $1 million, could you cash this in? Like, they'd be like, are you stupid or high?
Well, maybe someone one day will do that, and that's why these laws exist.
Maybe.
Yeah, I agree, Dave, though. I thought it was the land of the free. Anyways.
I guess not, and this has become a political show. All right, I'm going to generate a character. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. I hope I don't get Thanos.
All right, you got Professor X.
Oh, this is rigged, because it's X-Men Monday.
Okay, I'm going to flip the coin. You have to trash Xavier,
Professor X. I have to trash him?
That's right.
Okay, ready?
Oh, I'm ready, baby.
Are the listeners ready? All right, here we go. Start the clock. All right, Professor X, he tried to do good. He tried to change the world for the better by bringing mutants and humans together by forming his squad of X-Men back in the 60s or 2 weeks ago in Marvel Sliding Time. But really, he took a bunch of children, innocent children, and made them into child soldiers. What are you doing, Xavier? That is really weird. And then they're all dying in the line of duty. You got Thunderbird dying. You lost Jean Grey. She was corrupted by the Phoenix Force. Lots of bad stuff. And then we find out over the years that you had a second team of X-Men before the new X-Men, who also died on Krakoa. Or died on Krakoa. No one else died. But they died on Krakoa. And you hit it. And one of them was Scott Summers' brother, Vulcan. So you knew all this time, all these years, that Scott Summers had another brother. And he died under your watch, under your direction. And you wiped that from Scott's mind. Couple that with all the other crazy stuff you've done over the years. What was it? Oh, yeah, you became Onslaught, and you tried to kill everybody, and you were responsible for wiping out all the major heroes in the Marvel Universe for several years. You're just a bad guy, Xavier, and it's a good thing that Cyclops finally took you out. When, yeah, it's guys, you know what? Cyclops was right. Boom. Trashed.
Wow. Are you done?
I think I'm done. I'm going to get
that
a
was
lot
a minute
of...
and a half. Minute and a half.
Oh, minute and a half. Yeah. He's just a bad guy.
But no, you're good. You're good.
He's back now. He's back now, too, as X. And X is doing some shady stuff, too. So he can't shake the shady.
And he basically stole Phantom X's body, right?
I forgot about that. He's in someone else's body right now. So
although Phantom X gave him the body or something?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. He's killed more people than some villains.
And Magneto.
Oh, man.
He's really... Yeah, he's a... It's sad. I would love to read X-Men and have Professor X there back in his chair and like giving orders and stuff. But the writers over the years have ruined him so much. There's really this giant hole to dig out of. And I think they pretty much have realized like he's just better as like this like anti-hero, weird, strange force in the X-Men.
You know, someone needs to do a little accounting on this because he was also on the Illuminati team.
Right. That's another, yeah.
And he helped kill the entire Skrull planet, no?
Yeah, I don't like, that was, you know, I think I mentioned this last week, I don't know what we were talking about, but like there was this weird Marvel era where they were just pushing the envelope with everything, and it's like every character was shady, every character was doing something horrible, and it's like, you know, Captain Marvel in Civil War 2 was bad, that was terrible for her, Tony Stark in Civil War 1, and Reed Richards, and like Hank Pym, like Cyclops killing Xavier, you know, Storm going to war with the Inhumans, like, it seems like, and the Inhumans doing everything they did, like, it's just every character has been dragged through the mud, and I don't know why they decide to go that way. It's like, I think back in the Quesada Jemis era, it was, like, kind of exciting, like, they were trying all these new things, and then they just kept going with it, but I'm very happy that we're kind of cooling it down a little bit and kind of getting back to the status quo, and you can still tell good stories, but, you know, let's not make every hero into a terrible person.
Right, yeah.
That's my soapbox for the week.
You also got the soapbox in too. Yeah. I want to see if Xavier becomes a good guy again, because he's been kind of, well, he's been dead for a while, but he's also been kind of, yeah, like you just said, I mean, he was with the Illuminati and he's, I mean, hiding memories from people is really immoral, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Don't do it.
Don't do that, dude.
What a jerk.
He was actually very good, though, in Matthew Rosenberg's Astonishing X-Men Annual 1. I think he had a really good take on him, which made him seem like, you know, he wasn't a hero. He was very, very shady, but really entertaining. So if we're going to make him, we're going to use him, let Rosenberg write him and make him that entertaining, strange force within the world of the X-Men.
Honestly, I want someone to do the math. How much blood is on Xavier's hands compared to, like, Dr. Doom? Probably more.
Sounds like something we can put out to Twitter.
There you go. You could do a poll.
Or I can
who's
ask
the biggest murderer?
I can ask Jordan on X-Men Monday. Hey, you got a mass murderer on your hands here.
They might have an intern who keeps track of who killed who, you know? All right, guys. In our next segment, we're going to be talking about the number one book we're looking forward to next week that's coming out in just a couple days from now on Wednesday, this week, March 20th. And it's our top book for next week segment. What a name, huh? You would never have guessed it.
I like
Chris,
it.
Chris, I really hope you didn't pick an X-Men book.
I picked the first X-Men book, Uncanny X-Men, number 14, by Matthew Rosenberg and Salvador LaRocca. And this week, AIPT had the exclusive preview of this. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't read it yet, check it out. I'm really enjoying this story. And I keep mentioning Matthew Rosenberg, but I'm going to mention him again. I love Cyclops and I love Rosenberg's X-Men work. So this is just every 2 weeks, you know, whenever it comes out, something I look forward to. And I think the stakes are extremely high. I mentioned I love steaks. So
bloody steaks.
Yeah, they got Dark Beast last week. And I actually listened to a Matthew Rosenberg interview over the weekend that was on Make Mine Marvel podcast or the Week in Marvel, some Marvel show. But he was on there and he's talking about how Cyclops' plan for getting Beast, Dark Beast, was because they need a scientist on the team. And Beast is in the Age of X-Men right now, so they need a big brain. So he went to get the other Beast, despite the fact that he's like a terrible monster. So that's kind of cool and interesting to hear him say that. And that has me excited to see, you know, what else Cyclops is doing with this new team and, you know, with the end of the world basically happening around him, with mutants going away. So what kind of things will Cyclops do? So, yeah.
Doesn't that have you worried, though, that Cyclops is, like, getting evil team members on his team? Like, doesn't that make him immoral in some sense?
Well, I mean, Cyclops has already dug himself that hole. But I think what Rosenberg said was Cyclops is trying to be a little more transparent with how he's doing things. Also, I think the stakes are so high again for Cyclops that, you know, mutants are going away and this could be the X-Men's last stand. So it kind of makes sense that what he's doing. He also has to cure the new mutants on the team who have the Warlock virus. So you need a brain around to help with that. So I think in the end of the day, Cyclops is doing what he thinks is right and what's best for everybody.
He's a team leader. He's a tactician.
Got to be tactician, and then Wolverine will stab things. So
there you go. How is their relationship in that series? I haven't been reading it.
Pretty good. I think they handled it the best way they could, where it was kind of like they caught up, like Summers, Logan. All right, let's move. Like, because they both realized they have a lot to do, and I think they both realized how much of a waste of time that was when they schismed.
Schismed. I like
there are a lot schismed. Of. I mean, there's another one that you know, when Cyclops and Jean eventually reunite, that's one I want to see how that works out. But and eventually Xavier and Cyclops, you know, there's several ways, and you wanna hope the writers treat it with care, and I think Logan and Wolverine, Logan and Cyclops was treated with the best way it could happen. So.
Now, last week, AIPTComics.com had a exclusive cover reveal of Emma wearing Cyclops' visor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was, I forget the name of the issue. Is it 17, maybe? It's coming out this summer.
So I guess he's going to be hooking up with Emma in a couple...
No, I don't think you should assume that just because she's... I think, well, she's currently leading the Hellfire Club. So it's only inevitable that Cyclops is going to come up against them.
It's
going to be juicy. It's going to be some juicy stuff, like a steak. This episode is brought to you by Omaha Steaks.
By Trump Steaks.
Oh, good. We got the best steaks possible. It is a politics show. But I think that they're going to fight, and I think, you know, there's some feelings there, so it's going to be rough. But I think you got to remember that Cyclops now has the memories of young Cyclops. And he did not like Emma, and Emma tried to kidnap him and brainwash him. So there's some bad blood. Can you imagine what that's like to have the memories of someone else in your head?
That's frightening, actually.
Yeah. a young Dave who came to the present and did all this stuff. And
he'd probably make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust myself.
This is dark.
So my pick also involves heroes having to do a lot of stuff.
It's good. It's a good comic.
Justice League number 20. I've actually already had the chance to read it, so I'm cheating a little bit. This one's written by Scott Snyder and Jorge Jimenez, and Jorge Jimenez also does the pencils.
Scott Snyder, eh?
Yeah, have you ever heard of that name? So Scott is basically in this is part two of a sixth dimension storyline where Mixoplex is he basically gave a doorway to Superman to go into the sixth dimension and figure things out because they need to stop this super duper, like, basically God. Perpetua is her name. She basically helped create the universe. And Lex Luthor is trying to wake her up to bring back Doom to the universe because he thinks the natural order is Doom and the sort of negativity. We should all sort of look into our inner selves, our inner bad person, and be that. Wow. Like, don't reject it.
That sounds depressing.
Yeah. Obviously, the Justice League want to stop it. And in Justice League number 19, which I gave an 8.5 out of 10, we start to, it's sort of like the beginning of going to the sixth dimension. And then issue number 20, which is out next week, we get to sort of see what the Justice League see. And they get these answers. And I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a lot of good character work. There's not a lot of action, but you don't need it because it's kind of fascinating to see how these characters, they get to see a very positive future. And they're being sold this future. And there's a kind of an unnerving nature to it, sort of like a David Lynch film or a good mystery. Like, you know, something's not quite right, but everything seems hunky-dory. It's going to be fun to see how all of this comes crashing down. And the Justice League, you know, obviously will prevail in the end. But this is all leading to Year of the Villain for DC Comics, which is going to be a mini event that goes, or maybe it's a full event, from May all the way to November. And it's all involving Lex Luthor and his big plan to sort of sway the public into believing, oh no, wait, actually Lex's plan is better than the hero's plan. And actually Scott Snyder talked about this on the podcast last week. So again, I recommend listening to it because he talks a lot about the next year ahead for DC Comics. And this is obviously one of the most important books to be reading right now because of that.
That's also Trump's 2020 reelection plan, given the doom.
Oh my God, that's funny. Although we are a year from that, but maybe that'll foreshadow what Trump will do.
I have not read any of this book. It's on my list.
Yeah, you know, it's always a sign that the publisher has a lot of faith in a series when they put like their best artists on it. And not to like slight any other series, but this one has consistently had some of the most bombastic blockbuster style art from people like Jim Chung, Jorge Jimenez, artists that they're just highly detailed. And obviously they can't, their work is so good that they can't put out consistent work because it takes so long to do a single page. I think I saw for issue 19, Jorge Jimenez said it took him 4 or 5 days to do one double page layout. Like, that's insane. I can't even believe that. Anyway.
That's all I want from my big books is having the solid artists and having it all plotted out so there's no breaks or no changes. That was big disappointment for the new Avengers launch was how they said it was Ed McGuinness, and then right away we had Paco Medina filling in between.
Yep.
So that was kind of no shade against Paco Medina, he's very good, but it was just kind of interesting that they announced it as Ed McGuinness, and then we kind of was in and out.
And then David Marquez keeps coming in and out of that too.
He's excellent. I just love if they could launch it with a solid artist who's going to stay on it. You know,
it's unfortunate because right now, I mean, the state of comics, it seems like all the biggest books have to come out biweekly. Mm-hmm. And that just gives artists, it's just impossible. They have to be given months advance notice in order to get, you know, a full arc in.
Yeah. And a little plug here for the next X-Men Monday, Jordan White will be talking a little bit about how far in advance the X-Men books are planned out. So it's kind of, if you're interested in the behind the scenes stuff at comics, he answers a lot of questions about Marvel editorial in there. So check that out.
Now I can't wait.
Okay, let's go to bed now and wake up quickly.
What time does that go up tomorrow?
10 a.m.
Woo, baby. Can't wait. Okay, guys, in our next segment, which we did not do last week because we had so much interview to share with you, is Judging by the Cover Junior, the best cover of next week that we think sold us so hard, we just have to buy it.
It's like the Baconator Jr.
It is. It's good because the cover is marketing, right? The cover
covered is in marketing. Mayonnaise.
So I'm actually going to be doing Judging by the Cover tomorrow morning.
Ooh, what time does that go up?
I think it goes up 8 or 9 a.m.
All right, people, you got a busy morning ahead of you.
So one of my picks is going to be appearing in that, and I'll be talking about that in the weekly column we have. And it's Captain Marvel number 3 by Amanda Connor. She's been doing the covers for Captain Marvel, and this cover is badass. She's basically hammering some metal. She's now in this, like, bubble in New York City, which has turned into, like, a Mad Max futuristic wasteland type place. And she's stuck inside with this misogynistic villain who, so she's like part of this group of women trying to stop him, and he's like snatching people up. It's kind of cool. Anyway, the cover has nothing to do with that, though. There's like these cool Captain Marvel stars up in the sky. There are people in the background working on this plane. She's got a like bandana around her forehead. It's sort of got, what is that classic art of the woman worker from World War II, where she's got her fist up?
Rosie the Riveter?
Yeah, it's sort of got that vibe because she's hammering. She's like clearly, like her hair's like a flutter. She's doesn't care about how she looks. She's just working. And I don't know, it's badass. And I'm excited to see how the story unfolds, because right now the odds are against them and they need to figure out how to get an edge. And nice. What better cover to convey that than her getting an edge by hammering
metal. I love that you keep saying hammering.
You know, it's one of my favorite words today.
Use it when you can use it.
One might say this connects to the whole steak theme, because you do have to hammer a steak, right, to get it. Never mind. Go ahead.
No, that's abusing steaks. I just want to say, I feel like you triggered a lot of our alt-right listeners when you said a group of women in a bubble in New York City. I feel like that's the liberal East Coast elite that they fear.
Oh, wow, I didn't even think of it that way.
Yeah, so sorry, alt-right listeners. Oh, wait, no, I'm not, because you're idiots. Anyways, Uncanny X-Men number 14 is, again, my pick here. I just like this cover. They teased it a couple months ago, and it's cool because, you know, Cyclops is front and center with the X-Men. This is like a really ragtag group of X-Men. There's like zombified Banshee in the back who just came back from the dead, and you've got Havoc crouching there ready to attack, and Wolverine in his cool brown costume. I love the ragtag feel of it, that this is the X-Men. You know, Cyclops is shaggy hair. This is like the end, you know, it's their last stand. Not to be confused with that terrible X-Men movie, but this is their last stand. And then it's kind of an homage, too, to that Avengers Disassembled cover for New Avengers 1 by Bendis. And I think David Finch did that one, where they had like the red lightning bolt coming down. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see them doing an homage to such a recent cover. But and I wonder how that came about. But it's a cool cover. It's awesome. Usually you don't have lightning on an X-Men cover without Storm somewhere, so it shows that in the world without Storm, there's still lightning.
It's a dark place.
It's a dark place for sure, but she's in the Age of X-Men, which is a very happy place, right?
Well, you would think, but maybe not so much. All right, guys, in our last segment, which we actually ran every week for quite a while until we were like, how many soapbox can you do, is our soapbox segment, where one of us gets to stand on a little soapbox, much like Chris just did to trash
the Professor past hour,
where we talk about something that's happening in comics right now that we're either we're passionate about. It doesn't have to be negative. It can be positive. And for me, it's a positive one. Tomorrow, this week on Wednesday, Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky is coming out with art by Mark Bagley. And this is a story about Spider-Man, if he were still to live in the 60s, and how that would play out in real time. So he would probably go to Vietnam at the age he was at. I don't know if he will, but, you know, spoilers.
Cover seems to allude to that, right?
It does. One of them does, yeah. I mean, it's on the news. I mean, he's still in high school, so he can't go yet. But, I mean, that's a lot of... That's scary. Obviously, this is an Elseworlds story. It's part of Marvel's 80th anniversary to celebrate their stories. But it's a really cool idea, I think, because, you know, one of the problems with comics is the characters can't age too much. They can have kids, but then those kids get killed, and then they forget about them a couple years later. There's always a reset. And even Marvel has a very specific timeline where, what is it? It's like every 10 years is like 2 years in their world.
Pretty much everything we've known from the 60s has been upgraded.
Right. Everything's upgraded. I mean, sure, Captain America was still in World War II, but I mean, that makes sense for plot reasons. But in this case, we get to see what it would be like if Spider-Man was in his 60s, living in the 60s, and went on into the other decades. So, you know, remember that resurgence where TV shows like That 70s Show came out, and I think they did an 80s one, and I think they even did a 90s one. It's like celebrating the decades. So there's a lot of nostalgic vibes with this series. Obviously for older readers when it comes to the 60s, but it's going to carry forward. And I really like the idea because it's a way for the writer to sort of explore the past, real history, with a superhero, but also to explore the character and how they might be different if they were to live in the real world. So it's a really creative and imaginative idea, and I'm just really excited for it, and I'd love to see other characters taken down this road.
So Soapbox, a complaining thing? Your complaint is you want to see more of this?
Not a complaining thing, a passionate thing. Like if you stand up and you're like, I want more of this. I think this is, I mean, obviously it hasn't even come out yet, but knowing how good Chip Zdarsky's been doing on Daredevil, and this series just looks so good, and I love the idea of it, I want to see other characters taken down this path.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, everybody. I'm new to this show. I won't be here next week. Don't worry. It's interesting because Chris Claremont did this with Gen Next, which was a series that came out in the 2000s at some point, a miniseries or something. I never read it on the list. But the concept was, what if the X-Men aged in real time? So it was like the older X-Men aged and they had kids. And it was a weird book, I want to say, because it kind of, instead of growing out of the X-Men everyone knew, it grew out of the X-Men Chris Claremont wrote in X-Men The End, which was not a good series. And it had a lot of his ideas of who the kids would be. So I think this book was, the leader was Gambit and Rogue's son. And then it had Megan Summers, who was Emma and Scott's daughter from X-Men The End. So I never read it, but it's something that they did the similar concept to what Chip's doing. So yeah. And something else I thought about while you were talking was that we're kind of getting a chance to see this now with some TV shows, because a lot of TV shows are coming back now. And like Murphy Brown, you know, I never watched Murphy Brown, but I saw a little bit of the new one. Or like Roseanne, you know, where it's like it's those characters we remembered, but they're in the current time. And so we're actually kind of getting to see that with all these TV shows coming back.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's a different way to explore the characters and explore, you know, just aging in general and what that's like.
And I guess Picard next, too, with that new Captain Picard show.
You're right, yeah. Obviously, there's going to be some nostalgic reasons for these stories, but we'll see. We'll see how Chip does.
We're watching Chip.
We've got our eyes on you, Chip. And if you ever come on the show, we will cook you a steak, I promise.
So this episode, we've called it Anna Kendrick, Chip Zdarsky, and the alt-right.
Hey, that's a successful show if I ever
say that. That's going to be a lot of retweets this week.
Well, that's the show. Thank you for listening. Please like, please subscribe. Please even review the show if you really like it. It helps us with our overall audience. And it's been real, Chris. Thanks for coming on again.
Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
And I can't wait for X-Men Monday and all those little tidbits you got going.
Thank you. I can't wait to see what you do next.
I'm going to probably cook a steak.
Ooh. Can I come over? Dave, let's end it with what's your favorite cut of steak?
Oh God, New York strip probably.
Oh yeah, me too. That's my go-to too. So.
A lot of pepper, a lot of salt.
Really? That's in the meat, or you put it on top?
On top.
That's the cut is known for all the pepper and salt in it. I hear the ribeye is amazing. So I'm next time I go to a nice steakhouse, I'm going to try the ribeye.
All right, maybe come back on the show and tell us how.
Oh, I will definitely do that. Is there a AAPT podcast budget I can use to get the steak?
No, I don't think so. No, we have $0.
Perfect.
All right. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.